movies, including the people that all the people that came before you in their books have, you know, Whitney Strieber, when it comes to mind, have these portents of doom and the world ending and all this going on in their in their experiences. And I was wondering how you dealt with that and how much stake you place in it.
Well, first off, I never had anything consciously told to me or shown to me, as other people in my family have, and other groups of people have been shown the destruction of this and that. I haven't had that I'm consciously aware of. But what happened was I woke up on August 4th, 1989, with no memory of any event happening, but programmed to get the hell out of Dodge City as soon as possible. We were living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. The compulsion was very specific, extremely urgent, overwhelming. I made plans with my son, who was a graduate student in physics at the time. I made plans with him, the family, everyone. My husband worked in one place, I was in another teaching, where we could meet within 15 minutes at a certain point to get out. I loaded the car, the trunk, with every single item I could think of for starting over. We had this plan, and that's the only way I could even go to sleep at night, was knowing we've got a plan, we can get out of here, we got the potential. This pushed me so hard for 2 years, Greg, until I thought I was going to about lose it. We had to get out of the area, and it took 2 years to get the money and the ability to fulfill the rest of the picky requirements. It had to be at least 20 acres. I had to have my own water supply. I had to have my own fuel supply. I had to be in a very sparsely populated area. Do it. And we had no
clue. Is this what the moving to rural area thing is? All those
exactly.
Other women, it's just about
exactly.
The same kind of thing?
When I got there, of course, I ran into probably 30 different abductees from around the country who were programmed and compelled to get out of New York, Oregon, Arizona, Iowa, to Arkansas. I haven't a clue why. I know it was not my own general inclination to do this. I never wanted to live in the woods. I'm a girl in the town. I don't like the bugs. I don't like the crap. This was not something I just suddenly woke up and said, oh, I need to do this. It was, you need to do this now. And until I moved into the house we built on the 23 acres, this did not go away. The minute I didn't even pack my trunk until we moved in, it's gone. Now, that's how I personally was treated by this phenomenon. I have not a clue that had to do with destruction. I don't buy for a minute. And if you read taken the chapter about when I was told about the Jacob and Esau scenario, you know, I'm a high skeptic anyway, and then I'm told this is a manipulation, and I don't know who it was telling me that they did not act like the aliens acted. The scenario did not feel like an alien scenario. I was given a very different treatment than I've ever been given at the hands of aliens. Well, I don't know who it was. But it was, it made me very suspicious of, it made confirm more a sense I've had ever since I heard the term New Age, is that there are people being taken for such a ride, being put on this spiritual sled to their own, I don't want to say destruction, but to their own delusion. So maybe it was a self-generated event, although when I was able to get up right in the middle of it and check my environment, get up to the bathroom, look around, when I admitted I laid back down, I mean, I hadn't even closed my eyes good. All right, I'm back in the chair. Let's resume.
You know what's funny is something that Richard told me along, I don't know, about 4, 5, 6 months ago. He said that there were some, the people, you know, he knows, supposedly knows some people, some leaked sources
right.
In the government. Is that one of the reasons why you talk to him a lot? Do you get any contradictions?
No, I knew him before that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We met because he was assigned to review my first book.
And oh, okay. Well, the thing I was going to mention about him saying was about 4, 5, or 6 months ago was that he said, I don't know if he was trying to scare me or what. He's usually very straight with me. In fact, I think he is always straight with me. But he said the technology is available for somebody to park a truck out on the street and let you see whatever they want you to see without coming into your house. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I for some reason, every time you come up with one of these virtual reality scenarios or anything like that, that's the first thing I think of. It's bad that I have to. I think he's channeled that way right now. It will probably change in another few months or years.
Well, if
and you do that helicopter thing, I'd
right.
Say, you heard a helicopter? And I said, well, why isn't it that somebody is hovering over the house and doing this?
and nobody else
could
hear it in the house.
Yeah.
Well, if it was very human, I mean, this is obviously virtual reality targeting.
Uh-huh.
It's not a real helicopter. Ted and Marie would have heard it. But to posit, which a lot of people have tried to push me and others toward, that this is totally a human mind control, a nefarious scenario, cannot be supported by the evidence I personally see. I think there is so much in their hands of playing catch up with the alien technology and ability, and a way to get a handle on what we're having done to us is to imitate, to learn from, you know, their technology. But I'm confident of cases going back in 1905. We didn't have this technology then. I'm sorry.
Right.
My husband's first abduction in 1947, Labor Day of 47. I'm truly doubtful we had the capability.
The one when he was playing with his friends?
No, that was when he was 12 years old. In 1947,
okay.
He was 11 months old. He and his father had an abduction in the Sierra foothills. The dad was frozen at the wheel, and he was taking.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember reading that one.
I really don't think we had the sophisticated technology. Today, God knows what they're doing. But I know the history of this scenario is longer than our history of this technology. So I'm not convinced.
Okay.
Do you think it goes back further through history? Do you like Blaise's ideas that, you know, it's similar to the fairy lore?
Well, we're talking really hypothetically now. I mean, as long as you realize I'm just playing with ideas and then not going on the evidence, because these things lie. That's something I'm really sure of is they lie like dogs. And they say they own us, you know. Have you ever read The Way of the Shaman? You remember early on the man talking about when he went down to South America to study with one of the best of the shaman teachers, and he had taken the really dangerous psychedelic that you could die or whatever, and he sees these great reptoid things coming in from space, and they claim this is theirs, and they own it, and, you know, we're just. And he goes back to the shaman and tells him what they said, and the shaman laughs and says, oh, yeah, they lie like dogs.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I'm working on the new issue of my magazine that I do, and a friend of mine did an article using that exact sequence there and comparing it to the reptoids that are experiencing UFO
conditions. I think they may well have been messing with us for a long time, and I'll tell you just very simply, and it may save you a lot of other questions, Greg. People say, what's your general take on what's going on? And it's personal. It is based on evidence, but it's not enough evidence for me to make a solid case in any one particular area. So what makes the most sense to me, given what I know and what I've been through and what I've seen other people do, is the scenario in general that we are, and again, maybe it's more Keelish than Valet-ish, we are a highly valued resource that is husbanded at the farmer, husband, the dairy cow. And it would explain so much about why it's transgenerational and the effects, why the genetic work is done. Our farmers will upgrade the stock to make the perfect breed of cattle as long as they can. Give a farmer a choice between taking a sick kid to the doctor and a sick cow to the vet. That cow gets to the vet, you know? And those cows may well, if they were thinking, say, God, that farmer's so wonderful to us. He takes such good care of us, and I've had this miraculous healing, and I'm so protected, and he loves me so much.
Until harvest time.
Right. And you don't invade cows. You know, they say, well, they haven't invaded, they must be benevolent. You don't invade cows, you use them. That's
right.
A different thing.
Yeah.
And you also, part of what they may have done to us in the past, assuming this hypothesis that they've been messing with the breed for a long time, is.
If you read Sitchin or.
Yeah, but
Gods Sitchin, of
Sitchin's a whole other thing, man. The guy has so, according to anybody in his field in academia, the
really?
Guy makes up his interpretations of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
But they're not
verifiable.
Well,
there's another one that's much closer to what you're saying.
Gods of Eden. And the only problem I had with his book was that he needed a real good editor. His logic leaps were he could fall in and break a leg. But, you know, other than that.
I'll get back up.
Yeah. But if they have been genetically working with us for a long time, if I were them, now this is, you know, anthropocentric, so surely they're I would have genetically brought the stock, the cows, up to a point of intelligence where they could pretty much run the farm for themselves, so all I had to come in and do was periodic harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory that I'm hoping we get evidence to help support is that they did this. Upgraded the intelligence level of the herd to be self-maintaining, and that it's proving to be a double-edged sword,
right.
Because once you kick it into gear, the old butterfly effect, it keeps going,
mm-hmm.
And we're developing still more perceptive abilities and intelligence to the point where we're beginning to see what they're doing to us, how they're doing it, and through their illusions to where the cows are going to get so uppity, they ain't going to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've started something that they thought was for their benefit that may turn around to be what ultimately we use.
That's funny. And learning this stuff and discussing it like you do and putting out books on it, some people are learning to think in a different way. See, when I come and talk to you, I don't know, maybe if I was somebody else, I would try and get some kind of concrete opinion out of you or a position or...
But I don't have one.
Yeah, and you don't have one. And, yeah, exactly. Because my wife is like, you never tell me that you have an opinion on it. Why don't you have an opinion? Because I don't. If I have an opinion, I won't listen anymore.
Well, you can change your opinion.
I don't know very many people like that at all.
Well, I'm so afraid of being
taken. But this is causing people to think like that.
I'll lie to the book. I'm so afraid on everything in life. I'm not afraid. I don't want anything to... But I'm so reluctant to be taken in by a false thing that I will reject what may well be the truth as long as possible till the proof is irrevocable. I don't want to. I mean, even when I pray, I don't say, God, help me. I say, if there's a God of truth and love, that's the one I'm talking to. I don't want the rest of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying if. So you're talking to probably the most skeptical person who's been through this stuff. And I'd give anything if I had something concrete I could stand on and hold on to. I would. But it's got to be right or I don't want it.
I think that we're not going to have anything concrete.
Well, they designed it where we had so little. And the rules always change. You get a handle on this, and immediately they change where the handle is.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite amazing.
And they're certainly not studying us to learn about the race. They know us better than we know ourselves. They can manipulate us far better than we can each other.
Which is scary.
And I think crossbreeding is one of the big illusion scams they're pulling on us. I really do.
Something to like you said, something true is here, something true is here. Just think you have a handle, and in between you have this hammock of junk that's going to evaporate.
What a wonderful propaganda tool to make us think we share offspring. And they're doing it to save us on top of that. Of course, they tell other people they're doing it to save them, you know, but...
So they truly are space brothers.
Yeah, right. We must have some commonality. We can breathe. Yeah, right. You know, yet when I see the hybrid nursery down here and not the illusion possibility that we get over and over, I think they run some movies. They've got some favorite movies they run for almost everybody on the virtual reality scale.
Uh-huh.
And that puts out a consistent, you know, Hopkins is one of the worst. As much as I admire, and I do admire him, he's one of the worst to say, I throw out the anomalous details till I've got 20, 30, 200 cases of it, I'm not going to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure, they're running the same damn movie over and over. You get these, and then you know what's it? We know what it is. We've had it 200 times.
Mm-hmm.
The truth, to me, more likely is going to lie in the anomalous details.
Right.
So we come at this from a whole different approach, and he's been very, very reluctant to pay much attention to anything I've had to say. And I have paid a lot of attention to what he's had to say. I've learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish it could be reciprocal.
Well, stone.
Yeah, and
it's very well you and people you know, maybe.
Well, maybe, but I know that he has done enormous work, and we couldn't be doing a lot of what any of us would be doing if it wasn't for that.
Exactly.
I just wish you could see the logic I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I get through one of these
days. You know why? Because it's a logic of illogic, almost. It's a logic of leaving logic behind. To more, you know, it's kind of a holistic, very non-linear way of thinking about it. And even though he's an artist, which I find it hard that he thinks in the way he does, but he's a non-representational artist.
This is what blows my mind, too. You know, this would have jumped out at the guy right off.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, they're all telling the same story because they all went to see the same movie.
Right, they doesn't tell you anything about who made the movie.
Right.
Right.
Directed it.
And we know movies, you guys come from an area where movies ain't reality, right? Okay.
Okay, has anybody criticized you for telling, because I know about your experiences and bringing in things that they don't think are relevant? I mean, this is a rhetorical question, but it's something I want to hear your opinion on.
No,
like
not,
Glenn
not
Hopkins would say, these things happen, but we don't want to tell you about it because we don't want to contaminate the data.
Yeah, Bud has said that about his own stuff, but he's never said to me, don't tell people this stuff. He chooses to be paternalistic and protective towards the Dusties and towards the audience, and he has explained, I think, in public that he's trying to reach a mainstream group, and you don't give them everything at once because they'd run off and wouldn't listen, so you feed them a little at a time. Well, that's just not my approach. I think people are adults and have a right to the facts. So, you know, we just come at a different philosophical take on it. But nobody has told me not to. Richard Boylan has said, in Lincoln I was told, please don't, you know, put this in like black and white necessarily in the paper, but I was giving a presentation and Boylan was there selling books and wasn't in the room. And something I said apparently triggered a memory in a woman in the audience, and suddenly she sort of moaned, screamed, got up, and ran out of the room.
I've seen that in a Bud Hopkins.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, it happens when people's memories suddenly flash, you're going to get a response. And she was embarrassed, so she didn't come back in. I went and talked to her later. It was nothing I had done or said. It was the triggering of a memory that she'd already had. Well, Boylan heard about this. He wasn't in the room. But he heard about this, and apparently I was told that he said I was a dangerous person who should not be allowed to speak in public. And that I had been that I had been describing mutilations, and that's what had terrified the woman and made her scream. Well, that's nothing even close to the truth. And that's the only person who I've heard specifically target me for any criticism. I'm sure there's been tons of it. I just haven't heard it. So no.
You explained this in the lecture, but I just wanted to encapsulate it for when I transcribe this. And you kind of answered in the book, too. Why do you use the term ETs and aliens when you say you can't take in the experiences at face value? And my guess is it just can be used
as a shorthand. It's a shorthand term, yeah. I could call them, you know, something else. But aliens, see, I'm an English teacher, and we get real stupidly picky on things like definitions. Mm-hmm. An alien means other. I don't have a better term than that. I could call them the others. But,
yeah, the other is the other term that people are playing with now is between abductee and experiencer. An experiencer to me just sounds so politically correct. I don't want to use it.
No, I use the term abductee because I'm an English teacher who understands the definition of words. We are abducted.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hendrix, we were experienced with Jimi Hendrix.
Everything is an experience.
With the aliens, okay? Yeah.
I'm an experiencer when I'm breathing.
Of course, that's the point. And I really think words are important. And he's wanting them to be important because he's scared shitless of the ETs. He doesn't want to piss them off. I think that's really the thing with people who have to find themselves taking that kind of stand is they're afraid. I'm just not afraid anymore. I mean, I have told them a long time ago, don't bother threatening me. Don't bother threatening my child or my husband. I know we're all going to die. Hey, that's no threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm not afraid. If I could get my hands on them, I would do some things myself, but I'm not afraid.
Correct.
If I could, but see, you never get that chance. The minute they're there, you're under control and you think and feel the way they want you to. Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks. Get Tabasco or salsa or something.
Tabasco?
That would be fine, sir.
Did you want to eat and not talk?
I can do either one. Please suit yourself.
Oh, okay.
They want to hear us chewing with.
We're sitting here, and we're at the UFO convention, MUFON, which is an American organization. There are foreign organizations that do the same thing. But I don't hear of any abduction accounts, probably because, you know, who in the United States travels to other countries?
Oh, lots of people do. You're just talking to them. Yeah. Do you know...
Are they similar, or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you get some physical differences, and then you get some real identical things, and you get people like Michael Heseman who have the... to say only Americans have bad abductions by greys or reptoids. It's not true.
It's our culture.
No, it's Michael Heseman's little... Yeah, right. We're all paranoid. You know, it's like the guy who explained that Americans have guilt over what they did to the Native Americans. You know, you can play with all this if you want to, but if you start looking at what really comes in firsthand, yes, it's going on in South Africa, it's going on in Russia, it's going on in France. Sure, South America, I mean, everywhere's got it.
Almost the same scenario?
In many cases, almost the same. same, if not the same, in some areas a whole lot worse. I mean, there's some stuff going on in South America that I just think, please don't let that happen here. You know, I mean, really.
You know, it's funny, a lot of stuff's going on in South America that's always been a little bit more intense. Even from the 50s, it's been a little more intense, if you want to call it that, than it is here.
But,
do you think that's a culturally specific thing, or an error, I mean, a result of perception, or?
It may possibly be cultural bias. It may be communication. It may be that the people involved in ufology do their own kind of censoring, consciously or unconsciously, of what's factored in. I don't know. I'm not on the inside, Greg, of any of ufology. I'm a member of nothing. I have no backers or endorsers. For the most part, the big names, the Fab Four and all the rest, pretty much either try to avoid me or ignore it. So I'm not a person I can tell you what's going on around the world, except through the people I have managed to have contact with who do know these people and tell me what's coming in.
Do you think that helps you or hinders you?
It's irrelevant to me. It's just a fact. I mean, if you're going to ask me global questions, I'm so limited in my ability to give you some hard...
Yeah, I'm pretty good. That's why I asked.
Yeah.
Oh, there was. I reread Into the Fringe one more time before I came here, and I noticed there was that incident with your therapist, Dr. Riley, or whatever you called him in the book.
The stupid therapist.
Yeah.
He did call me the stupid therapist.
When you said you called him back right before you did the book, and he said, "Well, I wouldn't have said that to you now, believe me." Did you ever find out why he said that? Because you leave it at that and go to the next chapter.
No, I tried to get him to tell me why, actually. I said, "Why is that? What have you learned since then?" He says, "Well, I was just so unprofessional. He would not go into that with me. And I even sent him, not long after that, not because I endorse it, because I don't know anything about it except what they put out on the surface. I sent in the announcement about Treat. But, you know, some of your people ostensibly need to be paying some attention to this. They've got a whole thing that meets on it. Maybe you should educate yourself. But, oh, there may well be. He's done it. What he indicated without saying was that he has learned at that point enough to know he shouldn't have dismissed it out of hand. Farther than that, the guy, he's an academic, he wouldn't go any further. He's a young one wanting to get a career going. You know, he's not going to say anything. So, no, he never said, "Oh, yeah, I've been abducted," or "Now I know it's true." He just said,
I could have been angry from that to just thinking he was rude.
The worst moment in my abductee life, however, was with that man when I called him back 6 months later.
How are you?
And asked if I could meet him for coffee over at the university. And he said, I want to ask you why you were so certain 6 months ago when I talked to you that there's no such thing as flying saucers or agreement. What do you know that makes you so certain? And we were having that conversation. But the worst moment I think I've ever felt was when I said, "Well, how are we supposed to, since you're not going to examine us psychologically, you say psychologically, but you won't touch us, what are we supposed to do about all these?" And I showed him I had a couple of fresh puncture marks. "What do we do about this stuff? We're not imagining this stuff." And he reached out, and my hand was, I mean, I was here, and he reached out. "I wouldn't be telling people you have those marks," he said. "They'll know you've been abusing yourself."
Oh, yeah, I remember you mentioned
and
that.
And I think that was the lowest point emotionally I have felt in all of this.
That's interesting, because I had another question about this, and I hope it doesn't offend you, but...
No, it won't offend me. After that, I mean, God, I can take anything, I guess.
See, because after I read all these things, both Wes and I, people we know, do reading in other areas of anomalous experience, and one of them was that when I heard about all the marks and things like that, you know about the phenomenon of stigmata, where people of religious beliefs will take on the wounds of Christ. Have you ever dealt with that scenario and in connection with marks on people's bodies like that?
I have tried to consider that as an explanation. The sheer weight of what I've been through, case after case, and the marks that I've examined, I was hoping that's what it was, say.
Yeah.
It's not. In my opinion, I can put that on my list of facts as far as I'm concerned, it's not stigmata. When I moved to Arkansas, I decided I wasn't going to have a doctor I couldn't be honest with. I lucked into finding a doctor who just happened to have had a family relative, family member who had had a UFO sighting. And the doctor knew the relative was telling the truth. So she was open to explain my situation. I said, I want you to be able to document and examine in the future anything other than the bruises and punctures, which all they can say is, yeah, you got a puncture, yeah, you got a bruise. They can't tell you anything more than that. But from any, if any other anomalous marks in these turn up, I want them documented, and I want you to give me the best medical explanation you can. Uh-huh. And when she documented the 3-inch slice, where the skin had been sliced for 3 inches up in a flat, raised up. And I had gotten up at 3:15, because I'm one of the abductees who wake up at around 3 almost every night. I got up at 3:15 to go to the bathroom, and it wasn't there. Believe me, you feel it. At 7 when I got up, it was there. And she documented this for me. And she said, I don't think anyone other than a completely psychotic person could have done this to themselves. It's like they took a razor and sliced it.
Yeah.
And the scar's still there. I mean,
oh, it scarred up.
Oh, it, yeah.
Because a lot of times when you describe these things, you say they heal very quickly.
Well, they do. They do. They normally heal very quickly. There's a few things that happen that aren't. I was down in Tampa in May for a conference down there. I was alone. I locked my hotel room at night. I was sound asleep. I woke up feeling nothing had happened. When I got up, I had, and I've got the photograph, so you may think sigmoid again, but I had the 3, which we call the clamp marks. They turn up all the time on almost everybody. 3 fingerprint bruises so deep here, followed by the thumb bruise around here that they stayed for probably twice as long as most of my bruises do. I had a red circle impressed into my spine, center of my spine, and then a swath of these broken capillary passiform purplish red under the skin across half my back. Now, maybe that was sigmoid, but I was having a perfectly normal and uneventful, as far as I was concerned, night. My door was locked. You
have to be careful myself how much to read into what I read, and you tell me, and impressing my personally my beliefs on it, and saying, well, you can't see it, so it must be this. Why don't you consider this thing? But I haven't experienced it, so. You know what's funny? When I started reading your book, for about 3 or 4 days, I woke up continually all night. Just from reading the books.
And that's not a scary
book. About 3 o'clock.
The 3 o'clock is when most, and everybody has their own particular time.
That's
like
what cued my ear, because that was cued my ear, because you said that 3 o'clock, and I think that's exactly when I was waking up every night for about 3 or 4 nights. Well, it was when I was there by myself, and my wife was somewhere else. Because when she's there, I don't ever wake up.
We can turn the tables, and I can interview you. I've got some ideas of my own.
I can be as paranoid as the next person, I guess. After reading the books, it kind of disturbed me that I would, you know, I think I'm grown up and I don't have a sick. And then when I read the books, I lie there and I think, well, geez, what could happen?
We start looking at the past.
Yeah, I can read anything I want to and things that have happened in my life, and I don't remember anything weird happening in my life. Except Wes, I told once I found some. I went in my kitchen, I found all the cabinet doors open. I had been in there like 5 minutes before, and there was nobody else in the house. And the drawers were open. The top one was a little bit, the second one was this way, the third one was this way, like stairs.
The poltergeist stuff that follows all in this phenomenon is so bizarre. If you didn't have the UFO part, you'd obviously call it poltergeist, but it follows so frequently with the abduction scenario.
And I've never seen a UFO in my entire life, that anything that I could say was. Every time I see something, it's like, it's a plane, and I can tell it's a plane.
Well,
you got a red light and a green light blinking.
Some at distance, some right over the head. And, as phenomenal as they are at the moment, I think they're probably irrelevant to what we're doing. I really do. I think they're targeted for the most part, although there are some random sightings that occur from time to time, but mostly it's targeting a person.
Most of it's theater.
I think it is. I think it's distraction to a great degree, and we have never learned a single important fact from any analysis of any sighting or photograph. I mean, you know, it keeps us busy.
Yeah, it sounds like a thrill ride.
It's like the president's office. It's entertainment and distraction.
It's like the old magician thing, if you look over here.
Exactly.
I don't know how could take this question, but have you or anyone you know ever been requested to explore something they thought had happened and nothing happened? That's completely prosaic.
Mm-hmm. Some cases have turned up. I normally don't do any hypnosis. I have, on occasion, in an emergency, insistent situation, done like a little scan thing for people. After I did that stuff with my husband, I was not, that spooked me enough. But Barbara, who I always refer people to if they can reach her, has done, people have thought they had a dream that might have been something, and they wanted to look, they knew a situation, they were waiting there,
I was turning it around because every time you look at it, we regressed them and this came out, and I'm thinking, about nothing.
Things have come out that were nothing. But other than my husband's initial memory of the 11-month-old abduction, which his parents confirmed, circumstantially, we have not looked at anything under hypnosis. Or anything has come out under hypnosis that we didn't already have partial conscious memory. I can't say that's true to everybody, but I know Barbara has had people who wanted to look at things and turned out to be nothing.
A lot of people would have a problem with things recalled in dreams, and I know your reason for doing it, because, something may be a dream, but in fact, it's a very nebulous area.
It's a virtual reality dream, that's like that for sure now. They still are contact.
Do you get any criticism for you as relying as much on what you call and the people you study call dreams?
Not that I hear, and it wouldn't change my mind anyway. These are not things that are hypothetical in my life. They're there. They're real. And I just cannot help it if it's not in somebody else's life and they won't argue with me about it.
Right.
My job is not to convince anyone of anything. My job is to work with people who already know it's true because they're dealing with it. That's all I see my work as. I'm not out there to change anybody's mind. And I don't blame them for not changing their mind and for having every skeptical question they can ask. I think they should. But once it's happening, then think and talk to me and we'll go from there, So.
All the women on the chart in the back, which I actually found very informative, it's a wonderful way to get thoughts going.
Yeah, I thought it helped me too.
All the women on there had psychic experience of one sort or another listed. And was it that they have these, I was going to say before or after their abduction experience.
But there is no such thing as before or after if it starts in early childhood. It's before or after knowing you've had it. Before consciousness of it. I put some of those questions on the questionnaire and therefore on the chart. They did it on the chart because certain people in the field have raised certain points. Oh, we think it's Celtic blood. Oh, we think it's Native American. Oh, we think it's only people who the military can get through the intelligence group. Oh, we think it's child abuse victims. Oh, we think it's psychic. I personally have no reason to doubt that everybody has a psychic gift.
Not developed in some.
I mean, that may just be given. It's like, yes, did they all have blood? Yes, amazingly, every one of the abductees had blood. Some things are so irrelevant that people want to hold on to as relevant that I just, I don't see that may well be.
You're going to run into that problem with me, I think, during these questions.
Well, that's okay.
You said something about, you just mentioned the Celtic ancestry. I noticed all of the women except one had Celtic ancestry listed. And,
which is not surprising in the American population if you know our history. China, they don't.
Right.
South Africa, they don't. Not that much.
But generally the same things happen in Africa, South Africa and China.
We forget we're living in a place that has a certain cultural heritage and it's not global. But Americans tend to be real provincial, and so we got 90% of the people we've worked with have Celtic blood. My God, that must be it.
Yeah, it must be.
Well, they're not working in the Sahara. They're not working in Tierra del Fuego. They forget.
Right.
And you don't have the people who watch TV or something.
Right.
So one of the women in your, I guess you all use pseudonyms.
Actually, most of them use their real first names. What I consider a pseudonym because I didn't identify them by last name.
Right.
Make it specific.
Oh, she described that phoenix vulture type dream with the imagery of God and all that. I'm sorry you didn't have the last issue of our magazine because we talked to an ophthalmologist who had a near-death experience.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you while I'm here. And part of what he talked about was in the 50s, there was this doctor in Canada called Wilder Penfield, I think, and he was operating on epilepsy patients. And the only way to cure them, really, was to go in and fry the area of their brain electrically that was causing the...
Right.
The seizures.
Right.
But in the midst of that, he went through with a much smaller electrical current, went across areas of their brain, stimulating areas of their brain and asking them what they were seeing and what they were experiencing. And one part of the brain, people would get images of, depending on a lot of the times on their ancestry, on their back, religious background, would see Blessed Virgin Mary, would see saints, would see, since they were mostly French Canadians and they were Catholics.
Yeah.
And that came to mind when you were talking about Lisa's dream about that.
Well, Lisa knows, as I do, that most of what she goes through on the frequent basis. Now, there are things that are physical, there's no doubt, like when she almost broke her back when she was being zapped out of the bed. I mean, like the doctor said, my God, have you been parachuting? I've never seen this except in parachuting accidents. Parachuting up out of the bed, yeah.
Yeah. Wrong way.
But she knows that the virtual reality capabilities, and we don't know how the implants, what role, they may be all the role, they may be none of the role, they may be part of the role in there. We know enough about the fact that they have technology that can do this, that she knows they're screwing with her head mentally. She's not really seeing vultures and eagles. She's not really seeing this or that. Half the things they do on all, we have to almost automatically assume they're pulling this stuff. For whatever programming or...
And not just that little area where you see religious imagery, but your entire brain.
Oh, yeah. I find no problem with that. I'm not saying how they're doing it. I'm just saying they're doing it. I'm not going to quibble over if they're stimulating this part of the cortex or if they're
doing it
through an implant or if they're beaming something at you from a machine. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The effect is what I'm dealing with. People on the end of this.
Leaving
it. And I'm not a technician. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a therapist.
Oh, I was talking to you on the phone. This is a question that you just answered in there about the woman in the bed with the VRS while she's with the blue.
Right.
Which led to another question. How can whoever is doing this to people, be they agents of the government or aliens or something, how do they keep from getting people walking in on them or seeing them from a distance?
They don't always. They don't know it. Well, take Ted Marie Prince.
Uh-huh.
Linda Cortile, if it's a real case, I don't know. I haven't investigated.
Right.
Several people I have worked with, some I've reported on in the book, and you may just say, this is so trivial, you might not pay attention. Others that a lot more I haven't reported on. Neighbors have seen craft over the house the night the person has something happen that they didn't see the craft, but the neighbors did, or you know, those sort of things. We get inadvertent witnesses to some evidence that seems linked to this. Occasionally, maybe the Cortile thing, maybe the thing with Ted Francis and the Marines, was a very close-up witness in an inadvertent event. For all I know, maybe they do it on purpose. We still don't know the agenda. We don't know the program.
You know, it's funny when you said about the ceiling opening up. I talked to a friend of mine in Los Angeles, and she has a friend that he said ever since he was a little kid, every once in a while the ceiling in his room would open up, things would come down out of the ceiling and talk to him. And she said he doesn't want to talk to anybody about it, but I thought you might be interested. So, I mean, that doesn't leave me anywhere. I can't talk to the guy.
Well, if you're interested in talking with a lot of abduction research people, you'll find over and over and over again the wall dissolved and they came through, the ceiling disappeared and they came through. If nobody's watching, we don't know if the ceiling's disappearing, they're going through, if they're having one of these little scenarios going on. We just don't know. And you can try. People have tried monitoring themselves with cameras. They've tried, you know, sitting up all night to watch somebody else. It's, we're going to have to do better than that or we're not going to catch them. And I can't tell you what to do that's better than that. There's people out there a lot smarter than I am who should be working on this.
Do you think we can? heterogeneous thing.
I think the physical is finite and fallible, given what I've seen from first-hand experience.
In what way? Besides another, oh, well, one example is what we just talked about.
Yeah, flipping up on this, flipping up on that.
There is hope.
Well, I think there is hope. I think that one of the biggest deceptions they perpetrate on us is that we can't do anything about it. If we couldn't do anything about it, it wouldn't be paralyzing and repressing.
We wouldn't be talking right now.
Right.
Wouldn't be hiding it.
Right. And you read the last, very last page or two of Taken. You know I do have an optimistic potential theory. Mm-hmm. I've got to have something.
No. Or you wouldn't be here.
That's right. I just don't feel as hopeless. I feel, in fact, I've felt for the last year or so a growing sense of certainty and joy and something inside that we're getting there. We're going to get there. We're not boring in vain.
Uh-huh.
But then people say, oh, you're just getting a religion. I'm like, well, you know, people know me. I'm not that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a feeling that's grown stronger as I go through.
It's optimistic.
Right.
It's based on experience, too.
It's based, and also having learned, one thing that this has taught me is to pay more attention to my gut. I don't know right brain and left brain what those things mean. I know one means one thing, one means the other, but it's not my bag. But I've been more given to scrutiny of an intellectual sort than an intuitive, oh, my gut says do it. Well, I'm learning to listen a whole lot more in the last few years to that instinctive thing, and that's a growth that I think has been part of my necessity to learn how to cope and survive better with them.
Maybe you're
working on this? No, I think I've worked it up.
Great. How about you? I'm still on it. Thank you.
So, maybe that's part of what we're going to have to get even stronger at doing is combining them. I called it tricameralism just in a, very symbolic sense. I'm not talking literally growing a new lobe.
Yeah.
Although, I don't rule anything out.
Right.
But you know what I'm talking about, perceptively.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that may be learning to get that up more to a conscious surface so we can really manipulate it. Most people who have psychic gifts or have psychic flashes or stuff can't control it.
Yeah.
It comes. We're going to have to get to a point of controlling some of our better
perceptions. Well, that's the goal of mystical practices
and
specifically Western occultism for the last maybe 1,000 years.
But it may be it's not.
And before then, in a different form.
It may well be that it's going to take the kind of intense stress we're seeing under this thing before it really kicks in. Desire may not be enough. Practice certainly has not been for a lot of people.
You said they were coming in to control people and put them back in line, but it seems like it's helping people to evolve beyond trying to.
Remember that double-edged sword I talked about that kicked us into enough intelligence to take care of the farm, didn't mean it to go any further, and it's still going. I see this as a highly ironic possibility.
I think it could go even beyond that. It could be like a double blind where it's kind of the tough mothering or tough fathering thing where they're forcing us to evolve.
No, I don't. I think that's really, really stretching it. I think it's a desperate desire on the part of those really good hearts who don't want there to be devils.
Right.
And I'm not saying they're devils. Like I said, I think they're physical and finite and fallible. But, there are some people who are so evil in their actions, they feel like devils, but they're still born of a mother and a father. So I'm just using that metaphorically. So you'll say, I believe in devils or something. But no, I think we, in fact, that's the only probably real criticism I have of Valet's thinking, is that he will go from here to Waco to San Antonio to Brownsville to here to avoid the straight line that logic and evidence most points to because he doesn't like what's on the other end of that line. And he will go to absurd, illogical lengths of reasoning to avoid something that he finds, personally not.
John Keel does that too.
Oh, John Keel makes up stuff. I've checked out some of his stuff.
But yeah, he criticized in one of his articles, little fanzines, I guess, Holly and me, that don't check their references and things of that nature.
Well, I spent a lot of money and time checking out one story. Now, some of the stuff I've checked out obscurely is there, and I'm, I that you know, I I used to check a lot of stuff that I was interested in, and I found these things. Yeah, they're really there. But one story that he just totally, I mean, it was so easily obvious to check it. See, Bruce Birkin in Asbury Park, New Jersey, I happen to be a Springsteen person. I go to Asbury Park. I used to go a lot. This story said, talked about this guy named Bruce Birkin who was abducted right off of the shore there, probably not two blocks from the Stone Pony. Missing for 2 months. They put out flyers, had massive searches. They finally held a memorial service for the guy, and bam, he's back 2 months later, doesn't know where he's been. Described the guy physically. Gave the date. It did not happen. Okay? I checked everything, from the police, to the papers, to the morgue, to the everything. Yeah. Funeral home. Not even somebody with a different name, it didn't happen to. So that sort of bothered me. You know, I like Kiel's work. I enjoy reading it. But
as
far as what you want to base your life on, I'd be careful.
I like his ideas.
Yeah, right. And the one thing I love about him is that nobody did say God had to be saved. You know, I think that's important to remember.
Well, one thing Millay said, which I always thought was very fun, was just because a message comes from God doesn't mean it isn't stupid.
Yeah.
Right. God has bad days, too.
Yeah, bad hair days. We were talking about dreams a little bit ago, and you say a lot of the people you've dealt with, including you, have that night of lights, numerous UFOs coming
from
dreams.
Yeah.
I was wondering what made that special, because I've had that dream more than a few times. A friend of mine, Peter, actually, I think he's got suspicions. Not a suspicions, he's pretty sure that he's had experiences, like abduction experiences.
Well, I think
my friend Robert, he has the same.
Have you had it?
That one, no.
In different scenarios, I've had the same dream a couple of times.
I've had it probably twice, I guess, over the 88. In different scenarios, right? But essentially...
One involved...